Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
Half of what I say is meaningless, but I say it just to reach you, Julia.
The opening verse of John Lennon's tribute to his late mother was, as he put it, quipped from the Lebanese-American poet Khalil Gibran. Gibran is perhaps best known as the author of The Prophet. It's a collection of poetic essays that sold more than 10 million copies since its publication in 1923. What's far lesser known? Gibran wrote the first draft of The Prophet here, in Buzzards Bay, in fact. So how did a young man from the mountains of Lebanon come to write what the BBC once referred to as, quote, the Bible of the counterculture, end quote, at the entrance to the Cape? Recently, we sat down with Jean Gibran, a relative and Gibran biographer, to find out. And she said it all started in 1895 when Gibran Khalil, or Khalil Gibran as we have come to know him, arrived in Boston at 12 years old.
Gibran came with his mother, his half-brother, and his two sisters, Mariana and Sultana. They came to a street that was called then Oliver Place, and they settled in the same tenement building as my late husband's, Khalil's, grandfather. In other words, there were already Gibrans there. So they stayed and they lived with that crowd of Syrians. They were called Syrians in those days. Lebanon was not part of the population's name. And actually, their passports had the Ottoman Empire seals on it because the Ottoman Empire was what ruled that area. Gibran immediately was enrolled in the Quincy School, which was also at the Tyler Street, and a settlement house called the Denison House. And settlement houses were very important because they involved young people and tried to make it easier for these new immigrants to assimilate.
Gibran studied hard, did well in school, and began adapting to his Boston life. And soon, his teachers began to take notice of his drawings, especially after he captured on the page a particularly notorious sculpture at the Boston Public Library.
There was something in that beautiful atrium, our inside garden, a sculpture, a nude sculpture called the Bacchante. And it was very sensational, because this is a nude woman carrying a child, obviously drinking alcohol. And the censors in Boston became irritated. But here's this adolescent, young Syrian boy who is keeping now a day book of drawings. He drew the Bacchante. That's very providential, because the Bostonians got rid of that sculpture within 2 years of its being installed. So one of the fabulous things is that as a result of all his sketches and his talent, the people at Denison House called in a very prominent, well-known photographer who was also well-known as a publisher, Fred Hollanday. And Copenhagen Day is what introduced the young Syrian adolescent to literature. There is no question that he may have never encountered poetry and literature the way he was so early, and started to run around doing errands, posing for Fred Hollanday, and being immersed in the intellectual bohemianism of the early 20th century.
Gibran was widely supported by the likes of Fred Hollanday, especially bohemian figures in Boston's art circles. With that support, he began to stretch out and soon found Boston too constrained for his aspirations.
Gibran is a phenomenon And he's a phenomenon because he became so popular, barely educated. I mean, just barely educated. The fact that he really didn't go to a higher university, and what has evolved by a few caring people and his own feeling, he was terribly aware of either completely joining the intellectual community surrounding him, both in Boston and in New York, or just staying with the immigrants. And it's interesting that when he went to Paris, he returned to the United States, and instead of settling in the Syrian community, by now his mother and brother and younger sister had died, and he brought his sister, Mariana, into Beacon Hill. And people don't remember that. He did not settle when he came back from France in the Little Syria, which meant he was interested in assimilating. And when he went to New York, he could have settled in Brooklyn. He knew all those people, and also in Little Syria and New York City, too. But what did he do? He settled in Greenwich Village. And so he lived in Greenwich Village and became very friendly with so many people who led him to James Oppenheim and then led him to Alfred Knopf. You see what I'm saying? Could he have stayed in the Syrian community? Yes, but I don't think he would have become an international figure.
And became an international figure he did. Best known for The Prophet, which, since first published in 1923, has never been out of print. And that's what brings us and Khalil Gibran back to Massachusetts. Writer and poet Marie Garland hosted a retreat for local writers in cottages that she had set up on her property in Buzzards Bay. And in the spring of 1918, Gibran accepted her invitation to join the retreat.
Gibran went down there, and can you believe it? I think he had more fun down there than he ever had. He actually was driving in an automobile. He said, I can do anything here. Now, there was no driving in an automobile in New York or Boston. He said he had all sorts of freedom. Who was he with? Each of these guests had little cottages. And this is very interesting. A writer named Mukherjee, who was Hindu, and he was with his spouse, who was an American artist. So you can see, what isn't that an interesting, diverse community? And they're all enjoying each other and working. And I think it was one of the places that Gibran felt free, felt liberated, and was completely assimilated. There's no ethnic worries or considerations. It's just completely bohemian. And did he drink there? I imagine. And did he start what was called then the councils? That's what the poet first called it. Or also, you know, one of the words he also used was the Commonwealth for the Prophet. So I think it's his attempt to completely, completely embrace the universe. And so many people are always saying, oh, this is where The Prophet was written, either that in Boston or either that in Cambridge, of course, either that in Greenwich Village. But it was started at Bay Edge, Buzzards Bay.
The Prophet turned Khalil Gibran into an international phenomenon. Why, we asked relative and biographer Jean Gibran, does she think the book remains so profoundly affecting to its readers a century after its publishing? She paused. And then?
How to survive. Survival. He took every part of living and showed us, as immigrants, as people who might not be completely assimilated, how can you survive in this universe? That's how what it is. And I really mean it when I tell you that it was so important for him to embrace the universe. It's sort of a universal, the essential items of what people have to cope with. And you just look at them. You look at how to take care of your children, how to take care of education. Every single one of these items is something we all have to do, no matter where we are. And that's why it has become a universal Bible without the religious accoutrement. If you are religious, you have to obey certain quote unquote commandments. But we don't have to do that when you're reading the prophet. All you have to do is to become habituated with the major theme, which is obviously love.
Jean Gibran, co-author of Khalil Gibran, Beyond Borders. She wrote the book with her husband, the cousin and namesake of poet Khalil Gibran.